Are you thinking about starting your own cash practice? Maybe you've already started your own practice and you're starting to realize that there's a lot to learn when it comes to business. We can be great clinicians, but if we don't understand the business side of having our own practice, we're going to have a hard time being successful in business. Guys, I wrote a book for you and I took everything that I've learned over the last 5 years of running a successful cash practice here in Atlanta, and I put it in this book, and I gave you everything that you need to be able to start and scale that practice past yourself. That book is called Fuck Insurance, and if you don't like the title, the book is not for you. If you do like the title, it's the exact book that you need to be reading right now. I show you exactly how to start. I show you what's important when it comes to marketing, when it comes to sales, when it comes to operations, and what stage you're actually at in the business, you know, where you're at, what you need to focus on while you're there, and how to get to the next stage. I'm trying to set it up in a way where you can get some clarity in your business. And the book for now is 100% free. All you have to do is go to finsurancebook.com. That's finsurancebook.com and get your free copy of the book that I wrote specifically to help you be successful in business. The book is free. All you got to do is pay for it to get to your door so that I don't lose my shirt on giving everybody all these books and sending them around the world. And again, head to finsurancebook.com. Learn how to run a successful cash practice today. So here's the question. How do physical therapists like us, who don't want to see 30 patients a day, who don't want to work home health, and have real student loans, create a career and life for ourselves that we've always dreamed about? This is the question, and this podcast is the answer. My name is Danny Matei, and welcome to the PT Entrepreneur Podcast. What's up, guys? Doc Danny here, the PT Entrepreneur Podcast. And today, we have one of my business partners jumping in the group, jumping in on the podcast with us. You guys know Eve Gigi pretty well. He's done these with me before. And Jared's been on the podcast, I think, twice.
At least.
And we wanted to, you know, be able to highlight him a little bit more. I'm going to let him introduce himself here in a second. His story is pretty cool. But specifically to talk about some of the digital stuff that we feel makes such a big impact long-term if done correctly within your business and particular content. So we're going to talk about that today. But I'm going to give Jared a chance to tell everybody a little bit about his background, you know, how he got to where he is today, and then we'll dive into content.
Thanks. Yeah, I'll go through the short of it. So my name is Jared Moon, and I run a company called Into Three Fitness. We do online programming and coaching. We call it the Coach Accelerator Program, kind of like certification to learn programming, things like that. But my background is I was a fighter pilot in the Air Force and got injured. And essentially, a really bad injury, had to go through surgery, physical therapy, all this stuff before I was basically told I'm not allowed to fly anymore. And after that, I was like, I'd always really been into fitness. And so I went full force into fitness and really started a side hustle. Trained some people online, was doing like the side hustle coach thing, but then I went fully online and started training people one-on-one, individualized programming. And that just kind of slowly evolved. And I think where I got the real head start, or I'd say leapfrog, is I got a mentor. And she had been in business for a really long time. She's specifically in the real estate niche, but this is kind of like the hidden side to like me in general, is I didn't realize until after the fact how valuable that experience was. But, you know, just she made me sign up for coaching programs and buy courses and like all this stuff. I ended up spending so much money. It was like very painful, but it all worked out. And so it gave me a lot of great mentorship, taught me how to run business really well. I applied a lot of those principles in my own business, in business coaching. And then, you know, we met, we got together, and now I'm a business partner here. So that's kind of the short of it. Did I leave anything out?
No, I think part of your story that's really cool that I could relate really well to people that are listening to this or watching this really is the utilization of your side hustle to help pay off a good bit of debt, in particular from student loans, over a short period of time while you were getting, you know, out of the Army. You know, and I think that for us, we both have a fascination with personal finance, which is weird. I think most people don't really find that interesting whatsoever. And for us to be in our early to mid 30s and enjoy talking about insurance and, saving and debt, eradication and things like that, is sort of weird. But how much were you guys able to pay off? Because I think it was quite a bit, right? In a fairly short period of time.
It was $100,000 in about, 3 years, right under 3 years. And that was, and it really, what the side hustle helped, but it was also you're talking about, we were budgeters. It kind of hurt a little bit too, because it gives you a little bit of that scarcity mindset. That's why I always say Dave Ramsey is he's a double-edged sword. It's he can help you get out of debt, but he also gives you kind of this scarcity mentality that's not good for being an entrepreneur later. But yeah, we scrimped, saved, paid off all the money. And that's really what a big part of my side hustle was doing, to the point where when I was getting out, I didn't actually fully consider my side hustle being a full-time job, because I paid off all the debt. It was a couple months before I left active duty. And I was like, great, the side hustle has served its purpose. Let's go get a job doing something else. And it was that mentor who kind of was like, are you an idiot? You could probably make this a little bit bigger. I'm like, all right, well, yeah, maybe I'll try that out. But yeah, it was a lot of debt, and glad that's behind me. I often forget about that.
I think that what you bring up is a really solid point about how you can have this fear-based scarcity mentality where, every dollar counts, and, if you go over your budget for food, the next month you take more money away from your family, to be able to eat. And and to be able to get to a place where you can draw that line of what is conservative, but also allows you to enjoy your time here. I mean, I think this is where, and to be honest with you, we probably could have a conversation about just this topic alone for, 45 minutes and just think of something that, recently happened with somebody that, I mean, I'm not even that big of a basketball fan, but Kobe Bryant dying in a helicopter crash with his daughter is fucking sad. Okay. Just it's sad and it's unexpected. And I think it's also a important reminder that we literally have no idea how long we're going to be here. We've both, had friends, family members that unexpected things have happened. So the worst, I feel like the worst thing you could do is just while you're here, not even be able to enjoy time with your friends and family, in particular family, to create, those moments with them that live on past when we are gone. Right. So, I don't know for you, what have you found that you had to work through to get to that point where it's okay, I'm okay with spending money, but I'm also fiscally responsible.
Tactically what I've done is I plan out financial goals first, and whatever money needs to be allocated to those goals is allocated right off the top. And then I'll just shove money into our checking account. That's I don't care if this is spent down to that way. I'm not oh, you spent that much on groceries. That's a little high.
It's a great way to start a fight with your spouse, by the way.
Right. Yeah. And that used to be the case, right? That's how things had to be on the Dave Ramsey plan. So that's kind of how I've done it, but working through it, I mean, that's tough. I think being an entrepreneur has helped me a lot, because I think if I had a paycheck and I got that same paycheck every single month, I would feel differently. But right now I feel very in control of my ability to earn more money. And so things can fluctuate. There's the risk of also you could make $0 next month as an entrepreneur. So there is that downside, but over a certain amount of time, I feel okay, if we made a large purchase that kind of hurt, it's well, I could probably do something to make up for that over the next 90 days and plan accordingly. So I think being an entrepreneur and having a little bit more power over my income has helped a lot.
Are you cool if we stay on this topic?
Dude, I'm fine with it, man.
I haven't
talked to anyone. I've probably had at least 2 to 3 hours worth of conversations with you about life insurance alone. So I mean, if you want to talk about finances, I'm all for it.
Well, I think, this is a big topic, but I think there's a couple buckets for most people where they just are very much missing the mark. You and I have reinvested in our financial education quite a bit, whether it's through mentorship, courses, books. I mean, Like we brought up one variation of life insurance with you recently. And next thing I know, you've read or listened to like four books on that one topic. But that's kind of our personality is we're like, what is this about? I need to learn more about this. So I know if someone's taking advantage of me or not, right. or if I'm doing the right thing. Not everybody is necessarily like that. So I think that there's a few areas, you know, most people just think, oh, I just need to have enough money. I just need to budget. You know, I just need to be able to put enough away to where, you know, I feel comfortable. But in actuality, one of the first steps people really need to look at is take a hard look at like how well are you insured in the first place? Because what you're doing is creating protection essentially for your family. Ashley asked me today, she's you know, this again, kind of coming back to this Kobe Bryant thing. She's like, I just feel so bad for her family, right? Like, or for his family with his wife and their other kids. And, you know, she was like, what if that was you? And I was like, well, that would suck. Obviously I wouldn't be around and you guys would figure it out. But like we are insured well enough to where they would be totally fine from my financial standpoint. Like they would be taken care of to where they wouldn't have to worry about like, oh, how are we going to pay the mortgage or how are we going to do this? So for me, that puts me in a place where I feel so much better about, you know, my family, us getting a will in place, you know, establishing where things go, who gets the kids, you know, and who's going to take care of them, where money goes. And being insured well enough on your auto insurance, your home insurance, and life insurance, those three things in particular, and you could lump in long-term and short-term care with that as well. But I think if you just start with those first three things to begin with, it's probably the best place to start. I know, you know, for you and I, that's something that we've taken a hard look at over the last year. What would you say for you, like what things on the insurance side have you changed primarily that have made you feel way more comfortable with where you're at if something terrible did happen?
Yeah, I would say life insurance. So we don't need to necessarily get into policy types, but within the next 30 days, I will have three different life insurance policies just on me. Yeah. You know, and so that's just a huge like burden lifted mentally if something were to happen to me. Because I feel like a majority of what I do is for after I'm gone, as weird as that sounds. Like I'm really big into leaving a legacy, and I just having a life insurance, you know, in large amounts, that's going to take care of my family is really important to me. Cause I really, on a daily basis, like I need my garage gym and like some coffee and I'm happy. Like
that's your sauna, which is in the garage gym.
Yeah. And that's all I need and I'm good to go. So like, I don't spend money on a lot of things outside of probably the garage gym, and you can't buy that stuff every single day. So anyway, like I feel good. So I don't spend a lot of money. I don't have to. So having things like that in place, life insurance wise, makes me feel really good, really comfortable. And then you talked about the other types of insurance, like auto insurance. I never really looked into auto insurance until last year when you and I both did, but it's like, I had a very like crappy plan. Like it was just not a good plan. And I didn't intentionally get a good plan or a bad plan, but the life insurance agent is so, they're so accustomed to working with someone who's like, give me the cheapest rate. What's the cheapest rate I could possibly get? And then they sell you on that. And so when I think we both use USAA, I called USAA and I was like, I don't want the crappiest thing you got. I want the best plan that you have. How much does that cost? And it wasn't even that much more expensive.
Not much at all.
And I was like, yeah, that's what I want. And, you know, kind of did the same thing with homeowners insurance and then umbrella insurance on top of that. And I know it sounds crazy to some people probably listening, but when everything's taken care of, because those are the only things that can really break you, like a big like medical thing, you know, someone dying, you know, something happening to your house, all these things, because the little things aren't going to break you. Like gas going up to $4 a gallon, probably not going to break you. You know, someone slipping and busting their head on your property, that could probably break you. And so I'd rather be prepared more for those things than worry about what the economy is going to do and whether or not I can afford groceries next month and have all those things taken care of for my family.
Well, also when you have no money, nobody's going to sue you. So,
right.
So like if you're dead broke, like nobody's going to sue you, right? Cause they're not getting anything from you. But it's funny as you start to, you know, progress in your career and you start to accumulate wealth, hopefully, and you're doing a good job of transferring that into things that, benefit you and your family over a long period of time. You do have money that someone could take from you, right? So if we look at who is going to get sued, it's more likely to be somebody that has financial resources than somebody that does not. And simple things that, you know, that we made adjustments with that really anybody could change are things like your home policy, making sure that you max out your uninsured and underinsured portion of that. So this is basically if somebody got hurt at your house, most people will take the bare minimum of uninsured, underinsured. So if somebody got hurt at your house and they didn't have any insurance, you would have to cover it. And it's up to whatever amount that is. After that, then you're on the hook for that. And then having an umbrella policy on top of that, which is basically anything with home and auto is usually what it covers. If something else happens that's above that, let's say you get sued because you hit somebody and you're driving and it's your fault and they sue you for medical bills that are above whatever your auto insurance policy pays for, then they can come after your personal resources to pay for that, right? And again, if you don't have anything, it's unlikely that an attorney is going to do that, but a smart attorney is going to figure out pretty quickly if you have financial resources. So two things, uninsured, underinsured in your home, and then more than anything, your auto, because the state minimums can be really, really low. So if somebody hits me and my uninsured, underinsured, let's say is like $50,000 for an incident, well, if I'm in the hospital for a couple of days, I'm easily hitting that. And if they are carrying something that's maybe they're uninsured at, or they don't have good insurance at all, my policy covers from there up to a certain amount, whatever you're paying for. So you're not talking about a ton of money per month. I think our policies, we changed all these things around and they went up by like, I don't even remember. Maybe it was like $20 a month, $30 a month. And yeah, then adding umbrella policy on top of that was maybe another $20 to $30 for millions of dollars of umbrella insurance. So it's sort of a no-brainer, as well as MedPay, which is essentially pays medical bills associated to an auto incident that you're in. And it is super cheap and it's very easy to get paid back for things. We actually see a lot of MedPay at our office. So I think those areas from an insurance standpoint are just like super simple. It just takes a little bit of time for you to call them. And it's funny, I don't know if you got this conversation, but I called USA. She was like, oh, this is a great idea. Everybody should do this. It's like, this is the most likely utilization of the insurance and it doesn't cost that much more. And I'm like, why don't you guys tell me this when I actually got the damn policy? And she's like, well, most people just want the cheapest route, you know? And, exactly. And that's the information that you're usually going to get.
Yeah. And that's what that I had, like basically the same exact conversation with people at USAA. And cause they're like, well, how much do you want? I was like, what's the maximum? You know, what are you, you know? And I just kept asking right. That question over and over and again, and I was like waiting to get to the end when they're going to be like, okay, that's an extra $300 a month. And I was, but it was like you're saying, it's like, that'll be an extra $17.95. And I'm like,
seriously, dude,
this is ridiculous. Like, right. This is where you should start with people.
Well, I think for a lot of it, people just don't know, right? Like we didn't know for years. We didn't know. And insurance is so boring. Like who wants to learn about insurance? But I can't tell you how much I just felt like a huge burden was lifted off of me when I knew that I'd set things up in a way where it was, you know, a better opportunity for me to protect myself from the unknown. And I know for us, like in as entrepreneurs, there's no guarantee, you know, there's a lot of benefits in terms of there's no ceiling necessarily financially to what you can make, but there's no guarantee either. And I kind of think of it like this idea of being like hunted by an invisible wolf. Like it's, you don't know where it's at. It's close. You don't know how close it is. And eventually it might get you, and your business could go under. But in the time being, like you need to take care of as many things as you can to set yourself up to avoid some of these catastrophic things that doesn't ruin the years that you've put in to try to build your business to the point, you know, that it's successful.
Yeah. I mean, other than those things, and the one thing that can get expensive is homeowners insurance.
Yeah.
But, you know, going back to kind of tactical on that is that umbrella policy. I don't think most people even know about an umbrella policy, because if you're with the same company, it's fairly easy to get an umbrella policy. So if you just want to like slightly increase your homeowner's insurance, but then get a $5 million umbrella policy for $15 a month, that's kind of like cheating the system a little bit, but it works. You know, if your house were to burn down or whatever, you'd still have money to pay for those things. So I think all this stuff is like a no brainer and people need to take a look at it. Cause I know before last year, when I looked at my policy, again, the guy, because we bought this house about 18 months ago and it was like 6 months into living here, I didn't really ask any questions. It was just like, yeah, okay, got it. Insurance, good. I can buy the house. And it like wouldn't even cover the cost to rebuild the house. Like the insurance I had is like, if, well, you know, you own the, he was like trying to tell me, he's like, well, you own the land, so it won't be as expensive. And I'm like, that's not true, man. It's going to be way more expensive because you got to haul all this crap away and then you got to break it down and rebuild everything, like it'll probably be just as expensive as building a house.
Yeah.
And anyway, that
and inflation too, right? Like, I mean, yeah, part of it is that. And let me preface this by saying Jared and I are by no means a certified financial planner or whatever the hell. I don't even honestly know what their credentials are, but we're not.
Sounds right. CFP.
Yeah. Certified anything with that, but we are in it. Like we're doing this and we've also, I mean, I've gotten really bad financial advice in the past. And, I even from people that we, you know, we would trust their recommendation. Like my, our accounting group, I told them, I was like, yeah, you know, I feel like we need to get some help with on the financial side at going forward of like getting ourselves organized and what we should do. And they did give me a really good recommendation for an attorney group to look at a will and the beginnings of like a trust, which was good. But then they sent me to a financial advisor and I sat down with this lady. And she was super nice. Like there's no doubt about, I mean, like not to say there's nothing wrong with her personally. When I started looking at their approach, there's a few things you need to be aware of with this. And I think it's better for you to be informed on this than it is to just like give your money to somebody and let them handle it, which is what a lot of people want to do. But ask yourself if you think that that's actually safe option versus you being empowered to know whether something is going the right way or somebody is just making money off of you, basically, to be very passive, which in many cases, the financial advisor community is very passive. And what I thought was very unfair was you're telling me if I put all of my money into this proprietary mutual fund that has basically underperformed index funds over the last 10 years, whether it goes down or it goes up, you get a percentage of whatever you're managing no matter what. So you could be terrible at your job. I go backwards, but yet I still have to pay you the same fee because you're so-called managing it, right? Like that doesn't seem necessarily like a fair trade to me. And what really deterred me from working with this group, who again came highly recommended from people that we work with, was when she told me that, you know, I was sort of like, travel's important to us. She's like, great, let's start planning out like a $40,000 to $50,000 vacation. And I was like, that's not happening. I was like, where am I going? Like, what the hell am I doing for $40,000 or $50,000? Like, this is one vacation. And I knew I was in the wrong place as soon as we really started to have a conversation about what this looked like, because it didn't align with what my goals were. And the typical population that she works with is very different than what Ashley and I, you know, are and what our goals are. So I don't know if you've had that similar experience, but, you know, I think for people, they just need to know what they can expect in many cases.
No, I've never worked with a financial planner for that reason, because I just kind of got experienced around some of those people, like with my parents trying to use them and stuff. And knowing a little bit about finances, I was like, that just doesn't seem like anything I want to do.
Right.
And I set a pretty good financial plan early on to where, you know, I realized very early, like wherever you're going to invest, the more you spread that out, the less successful you're going to be, because, you know, people talk about diversifying and that's great if you have a lot of money. Right. But if you have like an extra $100 to $500 a month to invest in something, and you're trying to break that up into multiple different things, that's like, you're going nowhere. Like that's what's going to happen. And so I kind of took that approach early on and just started putting everything into real estate and let that kind of compound. But, you know, I think that's why I never really got involved with a financial planner, because I was like, all I got to do is real estate. I probably can't even do what you want me to do, because, you know, it's, I don't have the money for it. It's all going somewhere else. And so that's kind of been my experience with financial planners. But, you know, one thing, bringing this back to entrepreneurs for a second, because I hear this a lot, see it a lot, of, you know, sometimes entrepreneurs can be a little bit scatterbrained or whatever, and they really just want to push all this stuff like onto their accountant or whatever. Like the advice that you just said, like if your accountant ever says that you need to spend a lot of money before the end of the year, that's a red flag to me. You might want to like figure out why they're saying that. Because I get it. You're trying to spend money, so it's a larger expense to the business, so you'd be taxed on less of what you take home. But are there other things that you could be doing with that? Are there tax shelters this money could go? So that's one thing to look at. But Gary Keller, he brought this to my attention very early on, who he was like my mentor's mentor. And he said, you know, if you don't want to be involved in the finances, you want someone else to manage that. He's like, you won't be running a business for very long because someone's going to eventually take advantage of you or something's not going to be working correctly. And also learning that early on, I've just always had a very, I have weekly meetings that I never miss with finances. And like, I just don't really jack around with those things because, you know, I want to know where the money's going, what it's doing and all these things and be really on top of it. So if any entrepreneurs are listening to this and you want to just be the quote unquote talent or provider or whatever you want to call yourself and not worry about the other side of things, that's bad. You know, that's bad at like every level. And Gary, he even mentioned, he's like, I hate it. He's like, I hate having to look at financial statements all the time or whatever. He's like, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it forever. And so that, I think it's really important to stay on top of your finances.
Well, I've seen multiple occasions where partners that are not aware of that, there's an abuse of it in some way, or an employee that has a key role, the same thing happens on the business side, but also like what you track, what you measure really changes positively or negatively based on your you know, output that you're putting into it. Right. So to say, I just think it's a bad idea to say, I'm going to work super hard to generate this money that then I want to put into investments, but I want to give essentially full control to somebody that is not you, because that's usually where abuse occurs, is you're off doing something else. You don't really realize what's happening. And when you're not paying attention or you're not looking, that can occur. And it's rare, don't get me wrong. But even still, not necessarily abuse of someone stealing from you, but abuse of someone just being lazy, of someone being passive, because no matter what they do, they're still getting their percentage of it, right? So like, why does it really matter? It's more about how many accounts can we get under management to really build that percentage to where it makes a lot of sense financially. And I'm all for people, you know, I have two businesses. I believe capitalism is great. Our ability to generate jobs and be creative is pretty cool. But when I go into like a financial planner's facility and they have everything is made out of fucking marble on the top of the Four Seasons hotel, I'm like, I'm paying for this. Like somebody's paying for this. I'm in my basement right now. You know, right. like it's unfinished with my dog on a mic that costs like $60 talking to you on Zoom. I'm not in the Four Seasons. Could we do that? Sure. But is it a good use of our resources? No, I'm not trying to impress anybody. And I think you have to look at like fiscal responsibility and taking ownership of your own finances might be the best thing you can do. And for my framework, this is the way that I've always looked at it. And you alluded to this already, is when you're looking what to invest in something, the first steps that you should take, like, let me be very blunt with this. And this might sound bad, like 100%, your retirement funds can go fuck off. Like, don't put anything in that until you've invested in your own ability to generate more money. Like, if you don't have a skill, go acquire that skill. If you don't know what to do, go get mentorship to learn how to do that. That way, what happens is, instead of you just chipping away at this delayed taxed account, essentially, in most cases, for retirement, so that when you're 65 years old, you can then enjoy it when you're old. And you're trying to go on a Viking cruise with your old wife at the time, you know, down the Rhine River in Europe. How about you understand how to make the retirement account damn near irrelevant because you can produce so much more income in your businesses? So that requires investment in yourself. Like, we've both invested, I think we calculated it between you, me, and Eve, it was in the six figures easily. Mm-hmm. So, okay, people will look at that. Oh, that's a big cost. Well, it depends what you do with it. So instead of putting money into a stock or a mutual fund, which is basically just investing in other people's companies, why would you not take that same money and build up your own skill set that nobody can ever take away from you, ever? And then it's the scary part is, this is why it deters people, it's not passive. Oh, I can buy X number of shares of Apple stock, let Tim Cook do his thing, versus I'm going to invest in Danny Matei, and now I have to do work to get that money reinvestment back and build a skill. And that is active. So I think that's why people don't do that. But the best thing you could possibly do for your financial future is to learn how to generate more revenue that's not directly tied to other people and being dependent on them and doing it yourself. And I know, you know, for you, I would assume that time you spent with Gary, you know, with the one thing and your other mentors, imagine what the return on investment for that is. I couldn't even calculate what it's been for what we've invested in.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I say I got lucky, because I don't think just getting out of the military, starting day one, I'd be like, you know what? I need, you know, $15,000 on a coach right now, or $20,000 on a coach right now. Those thoughts were not entering my head. That's not a very military type mindset. So luckily I did have that mentor. And so that's where, to be honest, I had no like cash to show for any of my businesses, because everything I was getting the first couple of years was either going to real estate or essentially business coaching, you know, right, or courses or whatever. So I really had no money. Like people were like, oh, business is doing pretty well. Like, yeah, I guess so. I don't have it. I got nothing to show for it. So, I mean, eventually those things turned or whatever, but I say I got lucky because I would have never done that, but she just was always pushing me to hire another coach, get another course, all these things. So I spent all this money up front, and then I look up, you know, a couple years later, and you know, I'm way ahead of everyone else who was, you know, starting around the same time or doing similar things. And it's not because I'm smarter or better or anything like that. You shortcut success when you start tapping into these people who've already done what you want to do. And that's all I was doing over and over again. And so I think that's really important, but it's hard, you know, going from Dave Ramsey mindset, like I said, who's like, it's good if you're a financial wreck or trying to get out of debt. Dave Ramsey's great. But then after that, you really got to get away from him and get into some like abundance mindset people, like people talking about that thing, and open your mind to other possibilities and things that you can do, and realize that investing in yourself, like you said, is the best thing that you could do with your money.
Sure. And I remember being challenged on this when I was an intern and I've brought this guy up before. He was been super influential on me early on. You know, and his name's Andrew Bennett. He had a clinic in New Braunfels. They have quite a few clinics actually now with a group called Confluent Healthcare. But Andrew had been in the Air Force, and he got out to open his clinic in Texas. And, you know, I was in, and at the time, like if someone had asked me, I was staying in for a career. I'm like, dude, I get a pension, healthcare. I get to shoot guns every once in a while. Like, it's cool. I get to do all this fun shit. And I remember talking to him. I was like, why wouldn't you spend 20 years, then get out. You got your retirement, you got healthcare. And he was like, yeah, that's a huge draw to keep people in the military, because it's traditionally what you've been told. Like, you get this pension, you know, and my dad was in for 25 years, so I see it. So, you know, he gets a couple thousand dollars a month for the rest of his life, which is awesome. That's great. Like, it's, there's no doubt that he legitimately has a passive revenue stream that he has earned from spending 25 years in the Army. But he sat down with me and he was like, what he did was basically try to calculate how long it would take for him to make that pension irrelevant with his own business. And it was like 4 years. And I remember looking at this thinking, holy shit, is this math accurate? Like, there's no way, right? But it was very true. And I think for a lot of us, we think, okay, well, let me do the traditional safe route, because that's what everybody tells you to do, and that's a traditional path. But when we look at people like, I'm a big fan of like Robert Kiyosaki's books and his approach. And he talks about this idea of the cash flow quadrant, which is basically going from self-employed or from employed. So you're an employee, to then self-employed. So you're working for yourself. You're doing all the work, to then business owner, which as a business owner, you have employees, but you're still actively involved in it, then to investor. And the goal is to move yourself along this so that most of your revenue, if not all of it, is coming from things that aren't directly tied to your efforts, so that you put yourself in a place where you're very, you're not vulnerable to anything happening to you directly, and you have passive revenue that exceeds your monthly expenses, which equates to essentially financial freedom. And that doesn't come from just throwing a bunch of money in a 401k that you can't even touch until you're 60 some years old. Like, without a penalty. And it's not even giving you any cash flow necessarily that can offset your mortgage. So as we look at these things, and my viewpoints have changed dramatically in the last, you know, few years since we went into our own business. And I know for you, you've been going on the path of real estate as a vehicle to that. It could be businesses. It could be investing in other companies and stocks, or if you want to do that with dividends. Insurance is another vehicle. There's lots of them. But I think that framework of really realizing, like, you know, employee, self-employed, business owner, investor, how do you get yourself along that continuum has changed the way that I look at where we put money. And really, it gives you a really clear idea as to what you're moving towards. And I know you guys have done a really good job with this. You did it at a much earlier stage than I did, you know, primarily probably through your realtor mentors that already knew this stuff.
Yeah. And the similar military, I was looking at the pension because I could calculate out, okay, I might make it to this rank. And then if I got out right at 20 years, it's typically 50% of whatever you were earning is what you get. And so I just calculated that out. And so within probably 4 years of leaving the military, I had two properties that equate to retirement for that would have taken me 20 years to get. And I did it, you know, 15 years sooner than that, just through real estate cash flow. So that was my main thing. It's like, I'm going to miss out on that pension. That sounds awesome. But if I have at least these two properties right here, that cash flow, and will only cash flow more as the mortgages get paid down more and more, like it's going to be better than the pension. And guess what? I can raise the rent on those. And right. So I can, you know, get more money over time. And I don't think that pensions work that way. I'm not 100% sure, but I don't think that with inflation, they start paying you more. It could.
Well, I think they do. Actually, the military's is like, it's a small percentage that can increase every few years.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, it's really to keep up with inflation. But to your point, you know, that might have just blown some people's minds. They're like, wait a second. So, but you know, you don't have this big bolus of money you're going to then, you know, siphon off whenever you're older, right? No, but you have inherent cash flow from a property that, unless there's a catastrophic event, is not going anywhere. And even if it does, it's insured. So you're able to then rebuild that property. So explain the difference, in your opinion, between the importance of cash flow and accumulation.
Yeah, everything I look at is cash flow. That's why I don't invest in so many different things. Cause that's why if you brought an investment to me, I would immediately ask, okay, well, how much money will this pay me per month? And for a lot of people, they're like, what are you talking about? It's an investment. You know, like you get the money later or whatever. It's like, no. I give you money now. You give me money this month. How much
every month.
Is that? Yeah. Every month for forever. And that's the way I've just looked at it. I think because of real estate, and so that's why we buy and hold is our primary strategy instead of just chunking all this money away that's either tax deferred or taxes taken off the top. And then, I mean, because that's essentially what you're doing with like an IRA, right? Like it's building up and then you hopefully can live off of the dividends, right? You know,
right.
The interest. Yeah, the interest. But that's not really going to work out in your favor and you don't have very much control over it and it's going to take so long. But this buy and hold strategy, specifically with real estate, is you can immediately calculate how much money you'd get paid to have someone else pay it off. And then, what's the long-term strategy? Well, someone else is paying off that mortgage. So you only have to upfront pay for the down payment. And then if you get someone in that house, they're paying the mortgage off. So say you don't want, I want to, you know, my goal has been more recently to pay off property so they cash flow in a, you know, very large amount. But say you didn't want to do that. You bought a house on a 30-year note. And you got a tenant in the same month you put down, say, $20,000. Now they're paying that mortgage every single month. And at year 30, the mortgage is paid off. You never paid more than the down payment. So if you did want to sell it and have this big bolus of money, you have the opportunity to do that because you can now sell the house that someone else paid off. And so you just have a lot of freedom fluctuation. If you don't want to sell it, then you just, once the mortgage is paid off, you like triple your cash flow immediately. So there's just a lot of, in my mind, like reasons it's worked. The reason people get scared is like, oh, you know what? The water heater's probably going to go out. What are you going to do then? You know what that happened to me last year, one of my properties? Guess what I did? I replaced the water heater through a home warranty company. I only had to pay like $200 out of that because there's like some parts that weren't covered, but the home warranty covered the rest. Like it's pretty simple stuff and people get really tripped up on the small things, but I'm all about cash flow.
Yeah. And I think that that is a better approach. And even for me, you know, I definitely had much more of like an accumulation mindset until probably like a year and a half ago, we started really looking at some other ways of viewing, you know, finance, personal finance, but also like really taking lessons from people that are very, very wealthy. And like, what are those people doing? You know, the people that make the most money off of traditional accounts of like mutual funds are the people that run mutual funds. Like, some of the wealthiest people in the world are hedge fund managers, are, you know, people that are selling a lot of these products that are getting percentages of these loaded fees associated with that off of people that are trying to save for retirement, basically, right? So when you look at that, I think, you know, you really have to say, okay, well, if this is what the ultra wealthy people have done for generations at this point, why would we want to deviate from what has been proven to work? And for a lot of them, it comes down to cash flow. And a lot of my entrepreneur friends that I know, it's the same way. They look at the exact same way. It's a cash flow mindset versus an accumulation mindset. And, you know, it doesn't have to be real estate, but that is just a very proven vehicle to go that route with. And it's also something that you can definitely get into easier than, you know, maybe buying a different business that you can then tee somebody up in to generate a dividend for yourself and change the way you pay yourself. And the other thing with real estate that's really interesting is you brought the example of, okay, over 30 years, they're paying down the mortgage, which is great, right? So, but over 30 years, it's probably appreciating as well. Like it would be
and saving you on taxes.
A shitload on taxes. It's saving you a bunch on taxes. You're getting cash flow the whole time. It's appreciating and somebody's paying it down. So you actually have these multiple layers of compounding that occurs that allows you to really solidify long-term changes in your financial like safety essentially and in your future based on this vehicle that you can invest in from the money that you make from your businesses. Or you don't even have to have a business to do that. You could literally be employed by somebody else, but use that as a vehicle to diversify your income streams, start to create a passive stream. And then from there, what happens, what's really cool, is you get to decide how much you want to work. You get to decide what you want to do for work. Like, and it really comes down to what are your monthly expenses, and then how do you meet that with passive income? So you can do that one of two ways, right? Like, I have this high monthly expense, so I just need to get more passive income to then reach that. And it's not really truly passive. It's less active. Let's put it that way, because you still do have to deal with it to some degree, or you can just lower your expenses dramatically and then you don't have to meet quite as much. Right. So, but either way, keep in mind that whole idea of what are you generating that doesn't involve your direct work? Does it meet or exceed your monthly expenses? If it does, you're essentially free to do whatever the hell it is that you want to do.
Yeah. And I mean, one more plug for real estate investing, just because, sure, why not?
That's what you do. Go ahead.
The only other thing I want people to take into account, because now it sounds like I'm just trying to get people to do this, but hey, maybe you should, is where else can you leverage your money the same way? Right. In the terms of, if I were to give you $50,000 right now and say, hey, I'm going to give you $50,000, but I want $300,000 in Apple stock. And you're like, that doesn't make any sense. You give me 50, yeah. I go make 50. I'll go buy 50. But that's exactly what you're doing with a house. You're like, I'm going to give you 30, 40, 50 grand. This is the mortgage company. And you're going to give me a $300,000 investment that someone else is going to buy for me over time. Like that was the moment that clicked for me early on, is like, oh, you can't leverage your money like this. And you can't get a loan to go into the stock market. You know what I'm saying? You can't like, hey, give me a $500,000 loan. I'll give you 50 grand, I'll go buy $500,000 worth of stock. No one's going to do that, but they do it in real estate for some reason. And it works really well.
Yeah. I mean, you definitely could do leveraged stock investing, but that is basically gambling. Okay.
Right.
I did that. When I was at Baylor, I bought triple leveraged stocks. This is when the financial, all the financial shit was going crazy, you know, at 2000, I think it was like 2008, 2009 timeframe. And I day traded while I was in, at Baylor. This is like, I don't tell this story often, but like I literally day traded while I was in like anatomy and neuroscience. And it was the most terrifying thing I've ever done. I took our tax return and I bought triple leveraged, stocks that basically either went with or shorted the market. And I just felt that there would be a cadence of every time that the market would go up a little bit, the next day it would go down. And there's a pattern of that. So on the days that it would go up, I would buy triple leveraged stocks that basically said it was going to go down. So I was short the market, and it was 3x for every dollar that I put in. But it's also a terrible investment strategy, because you can quickly lose a lot of money if you really think about that. And very rarely are house or real estate prices going to fall by like 10% in a day, which could happen in a stock. And if you're triple leveraging that, it's even more. And it's not even, I don't even know if they can sell these anymore, to be honest with you, because of the way they structure them, it's not even fair to the investor. So anyway, I got out of that pretty quick because it was stressing me out. And all my classmates around me were like watching the stock ticker while I'm like, should I sell it? And no matter what happens, you have this inherent moment of like, oh, if it goes up, shit, I should have held on to it. And if you sell it and it goes down, you feel kind of good about yourself. But eventually, it's always going to go more up more than whenever you were at. So you always sort of have this moment of realizing, well, crap, I should have just held on to it long term instead of feeling like I'm trying to play the market, because you can't win that game. I mean, I can't win that game. Maybe some people are much smarter than us, but I think it's just you being able to take your ability to generate more revenue. So step one, like invest in yourself to get the skills to acquire the what you need to then be able to generate more income. Like, this is really the easiest way to put it. What if you made an extra $50,000 a year? Like, what if you did that and all you did was put that towards investments that over time generated more income for you and your family via cash flow? So the question is not, oh, well, okay, is it possible to make an extra $50,000 a year? For sure, it totally is. You just don't know how to do it. So if you don't know how to do it, how are you going to do that? Like, you have to learn a skill. You have to invest in yourself to learn the skill. Then take that and put it into things that generate cash flow, not just accumulation. And then build that till you get to a point where it exceeds your expenses. You're good to go. And as simple as that sounds, it's really not. That's just the path forward from what we've seen and what we're on. And hopefully we're catching you earlier than whenever you and I kind of started with this and started to develop these really strong habits.
And just be good with your finances, because most people increase 50 grand a year in take home pay, you're going to have 50 grand worth of new stuff.
You're going to have a BMW.
That's the biggest thing. Like, even if it's a guaranteed 50 grand for the rest of your life and you're like comfortable increasing your expenses, just don't. You got to be smart with your money first. Like, don't just like go crazy if you start earning more money.
Well, I think it's even a deeper conversation than that. Like, this, again, like, for time's sake, we're going to wrap the sucker up. But the question really comes down to, what do you find importance in life, right? So like, what is that? And maybe it is a $60,000 BMW. For me, it's not, for you, it's not. There's nothing wrong with that. That might be your thing. That gives you a lot of joy and you like cars and cool. So, but earn the right to be able to get those things by making it to where it's not a huge financial hit for you to have these hobbies or have these things that you really enjoy. That's sort of our point, is like, enjoy the things along the way. For us, it really comes down to spending as much meaningful time with our friends and family as possible. Like, we want to take our kids on, a lot of trips. We want to spend a lot of time with them. We want to expose them to different areas and different cultures and be with them as they're learning about different things and exposing them to, different parts of the world where people think differently. And I think that's a huge investment in them as well as us and how we interact with other people. And that's what we find value in. We also, we find value in having a nice big house that we can host our family at. Like, that's an important thing for Ashley and I. Like, we will have, 14, 16 people around our table at Thanksgiving. Like, we want to be the people that can absorb family when they come in town. Like, that is a important thing for us. So we put money towards having a house that's big enough to be able to be the center of sort of our family. And, but we know what we value. If you don't know what that is yet, it's really hard to know what you need to then allocate money towards and not. So anyway, that's probably a much, much deeper conversation that we could have at a different time. But yeah, I appreciate you not talking about content with me. And
maybe next time, man.
Maybe we should. But hey, if you guys like this stuff, I don't know. We've toyed around with this a little bit in terms of, is this something that we should, formulate a little bit of organization for and help you guys out with some of this? I think it's the bedrock of, really, if you have a successful business and you have dog shit personal finance, doesn't matter. You're going to squander your opportunity to really put yourself in a different financial conversation and place and safety. So if you like this stuff, let us know. Shoot us an email. Take a screenshot of this. Put it up on Instagram. Tag me in it. And let me see. If I see enough of those, like, it's probably something that we'll dive into. The other thing is, we will be in Denver at CSM. We're not actually going to CSM, but we will be there snowboarding and meeting to organize some stuff for the business. And then we're going to do a happy hour Wednesday night. I think it's Wednesday night, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yes. Wednesday night. If you're not on our email list yet, get on there. We'll put up the details in the Facebook group as well, PT Entrepreneurs Facebook group. It'll be Wednesday night, super informal. We want to get together, just chat with some other PT entrepreneurs in the area, and just connect so we can actually see that we're real people and not just people that talk on a podcast or a video that you can actually like interact with and see our beards in person, which is, mine's not very impressive. So you'll be let down.
Yeah, mine isn't either.
No, it's not. None of ours are. But what the hell? Anyway, Jared, you got anything left you want to add?
No. I hope we can do more and more of these podcasts because I am one of the business partners here, and hopefully I can provide more information and content and helpful information as time goes along. But happy to be here and help in any way I can.
Yeah, and I think for you guys, we do want to expose Jared to you more because, you know, from a depth of knowledge standpoint, when it comes to the digital side of advertising, sales, marketing, and we see a lot of people moving towards a hybrid model, which I think is really the future of having digital services as in conjunction with brick and mortar services. He's got an incredible amount of knowledge there. And if you really want to see what he's doing and what his company does, just go look up Garage Gym Athlete. That's Jared's company. I guarantee you'll go look at it and you'll get on Facebook or Instagram and you're going to be getting retargeted with ads and you might just sign up forever for a trial. going to happen. And see what it looks like to have a really well-run online company. It's a really good example of that. So go to that website and you can check it out there. And if you train your garage, some pretty awesome programming as well, and you can sign up for that. But as always, guys, hey, thanks so much for your time. If you like the podcast, like we said, give us a screenshot on Instagram, tag me in it, let me know. We can start doing more financial podcasts. And if I don't see much of that, I know we bored you guys talking about life insurance for 45 to 50 minutes. So as always, guys, thanks so much for listening. We'll catch you next time. You want more cash PT biz help? If so, go get a copy of my book, Fuck Insurance. It's your playbook to successful performance PT practice and never having to deal with insurance again. You can get a free copy at finsurancebook.com. That's finsurancebook.com. Inside this book, you'll learn the direct techniques that we have used to become one of the fastest 100% cash PT practices in the country.